Hi there, and welcome back to the Prepare Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Makula, and today is episode 7. Every month, we invite a woman in ministry to join us and share their experiences and wisdom to prepare and equip us in our faith, pursuits, and callings. Today, we welcome Sarah Johnson. Sarah is a longtime friend and inspiration to me. She's also a leader in the Salvation Army. Sarah is a leader because she displays obedience to Christ, has a humble and teachable spirit, and is boldly trying things many of us only dream about doing. A longtime resident of Michigan, Sarah uprooted her life in an act of obedience and moved to the city of St. Louis. She is a resident of the Benton Park West neighborhood and is the director of the Urban Mission Center, which is the ministry of the Salvation Army that prepares urban leaders who are ready to take on the complexities of city work. When Sarah is not nurturing and mentoring young adult leaders and building relationships and running for office in her community, she is gardening at the community garden she oversees and hanging out with her dog, Winston. Today, Sarah shares about the time she told Jesus anything, anywhere, and whatever, and where that got her. She also shares about how Jesus used the Salvation Army to form her, and what not to say to single people. She also shares about how living among injustice has changed her worldview. Thank you again for joining us. Here is my conversation with Sarah. Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
Welcome to the Prepare Podcast.
Thank you.
Today we are recording from Wonderland Camp at the Regeneration Conference. And this is an exciting moment to meet with Sarah because she was just sharing with me that just recently, this last week, was the first time that she has shared in great detail her experience and her new ministry position, which is not new. It's been around, she's been at it for 2 years, but really reflecting and sharing. And we're going to talk a bit about that and talk about just Sarah personally in her life. So you guys are tuning into a great episode that I know is going to be rich and fun and full. So we're going to back up and Sarah's going to kind of give her own intro, tell a little history about her previous jobs in Michigan, and now where she's at. So Sarah, why don't you talk about how you got where you are?
Okay, I can do that. Well, I started working for the Salvation Army actually right out of college, I was at Detroit Grandale and the Pontiac Salvation Army, working in their after-school programs. I had a degree in education, and this was a place for me to kind of plug in and use that while I was looking for a teaching job. Taught for a couple years after my time there, and then really felt a pull back towards the city specifically and towards ministry. So I took a job with the youth department in Eastern Michigan, and I was hired as the young adult ministries director. So it was my job to start a young adult ministry in our division, and I did that for like 6 months, when the woman who was leaving or who was directing the after-school program in Eastern Michigan resigned. And they said, oh, you have some experience. You have, this degree in education. Would you take on this additional role? So I kind of then for almost 5 years was doing a little bit of both, running the after-school programs in Detroit and Pontiac, and then also working on this young adult ministry. So, yeah, that's where I was before moving to St. Louis. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. And, I mean, you going to St. Louis, that happened in 2013. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was a big deal because you know, you're an adult. You own mm-hmm. a home. Mm-hmm. You're invested at a court. Your family's all in Michigan. Mm-hmm. So tell me a bit about that journey to St. Louis and the call to be obedient. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, for sure. So at CBLI in 2013, I arrived there just like full of discontent and knowing that change was coming. I didn't know what it looked like. I didn't know how to pursue it. But I remember in just like a moment at CBLI, I was like, all right, God, I will go anywhere and I will do anything. Even if that means going to training.
Whoa. Which you went there.
I went there. And because I knew that God had something for me and I didn't know what it was. And I didn't want to miss out on the blessing of obedience by closing my heart off to something that maybe he had for me. And so I got home after that, kind of knowing again something was coming. And this happened right when my dad had triple bypass surgery and like didn't handle it well. Not that he handles any medical anything well. But, you know, what should have been, you know, a few weeks of recovery actually, you know, took us through all of September, all of October. And then it was just like a week before Thanksgiving that he finally was home. During that time when he was, you know, we're waiting to see, like, what is the future here? Like, I mean, it was serious. You know, we didn't know if he was coming home. And during that time, I got a phone call and someone from St. Louis was like, hey, there's this job and I think it's like the perfect thing for you. I think you should apply. And I was like, I looked at the job description and I thought, this is my dream. I have to do this. And so I immediately that day, I used to work right next to my mom. Our offices were next to each other. And yeah, that's a whole nother podcast. so I went over to her office and I shut the door and I was like, Mom, I think I might have this opportunity. And she just looked at me and she was like, you have to go. And that was like enough for me to be like, all right, this is what God had in mind. Because despite like what was going on in my family, despite, you know, the fact that I own this house and had all of these obligations, my mom just like gave me that word of like, go, you have to pursue this. And I did. And I moved Thanksgiving. So from the time I like applied, interviewed, and accepted the job and moved was like 4 weeks.
Wow. Who was that person that called you?
Gail Aho.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And how did everything fall into place? Like with selling your house, like those pieces?
Oh, man. Just total evidence of God's hand in all of this would be I had friends who were serving as missionaries in Spain, and they were coming home looking to settle in Metro Detroit, and they needed a place. So it worked perfectly. They rented my house, and they were able to stay for 2 years. And then it came time to, okay, you know, do I keep renting this house, you know, 600 miles away? Mm-hmm. Or do I really look to sell? And, you know, we realized then it was kind of time for my grandma and grandpa to sell their family farm and move closer to my parents. So my house was a mile from my mom and dad. So they sold their farm, packed up, and then just actually last week closed on my house. So they bought my little starter home for retirement. Yeah. So, I mean, of all the things that could go wrong when you rent a house, nothing did. I felt so at peace about that, and it was never an issue. So just further evidence that that this is what God intended for me.
So can you describe your job?
Yes. My job is unlike any other job I know of, which is kind of great. So I'm the director of the Urban Mission Center. And I describe the Urban Mission Center as we're more of a people than we are a place. And our focus is on, you know, how can we help young adults find their place in God's mission in our neighborhood specifically, with the hope that like they are able to figure out how to join in, how to be a part of that, and then take what they know to another city, another place, so that it's not just my neighborhood of Benton Park West benefiting, but it's, you know, all of the cities that the Salvation Army is in. So I with that, I work a lot in our neighborhood. Like I connect with local nonprofits and with social organizations, local government. I do a lot of that. And then I also lead a community called Temple Houses. And this is where young adults can come live with us for 1 or 2 years right in the city. We actually own these 6 houses, and they can come live with us. They serve in our neighborhood. They serve at our core. So I help kind of manage that program. I serve as a mentor, and I connect our people with other mentors. And so, yeah, it's like no day is the same. We've been given a real gift as far as like a space and some freedom to just experiment with something new, which I think like that's such a gift. So many ministries are so established that you kind of have a certain expectation or a certain way to approach things, but we've just kind of been told, figure out what this could look like. Mm-hmm. Like, what could this be? And which is like so scary, mm-hmm. to not have any real parameters or like, this is, you know, I don't have a checklist of like, do these things and then you will get like an A on your job report. Mm-hmm. Instead, it's like, I'm making it up, you know, the standard, I guess.
It's exciting and scary, but thrilling.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
For you personally, what has God developed in you since arriving in St. Louis that has surprised you the most?
Oh, man. I will say the last 2 years, I've experienced more personal growth than at any other point in my life. That includes like college and all of those things. I feel like living in an urban setting, in an under-resourced neighborhood, you are confronted daily with injustice. And it's just not something you have to see or experience in, you know, a suburban life. And I knew about these things before moving, but actually living and seeing it, and like I like struggled to articulate how my own mindset and my soul has changed since just living in such a tough place. You know, seeing the hardships of my neighbors and realizing that our systems are a part of that, and that you know, we have a part to play in the fixing of that and the reconciliation of those things. Mm. So that's been huge. I think also I've learned really like what it means to be hospitable. You know, I came from a place where all my friends were the hostesses. You know, they were the ones who had everyone over. They were married, they had kids, their houses were the places we would hang out. And so I didn't have that opportunity very often to have people in my home. And now I have like a revolving door. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful. I've met so many great people. But it's been a real challenge. I'm an introvert. Mm-hmm. Before moving to St. Louis, was not very neat. And now, like, I never know when someone's coming over. So my house is always clean, which, no, relatively. I shouldn't say that. I don't want to put that out there. I don't want to put that out there. Like, I've somehow arrived.
In St. Louis. Yeah. Or maybe listening.
But, like, I in comparison to life before, mm-hmm. my house is, like, pretty clean. And that seems like a silly thing. To mention as far as like, I'm surprised at this, but like if you knew me well before moving to St. Louis and then you came to my house today, you'd be like, huh, cool.
This place has really changed her.
Yeah.
You've changed.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I thought of along how you've developed and changed is something minor but major, is that you've found your green thumb.
Yes. Oh, good. Yes. I love that you brought that up. Yeah. I feel like I finally earned like all of the emblems of my childhood. Because I know that I didn't really deserve them in elementary through high school. So I inherited a community garden, and it was one of those things like, if I didn't take it on, it would die. Mm-hmm. And it happens to be in my yard. I was like, well, I don't want this to be ugly. Mm-hmm. So I had a friend, our time in St. Louis overlapped a little. And so we worked on it together, and now like it's expanded into something crazy. Mm-hmm. And I think we've quadrupled the size of our garden space since I've been there. And it's a great, I love, so I'm like a nurturer. I always have been. I feel like that's been my role in my family. But with my family so far away, it's like there's nobody to take care of. So I feel like I've transferred all of those things onto my plants. Mm. Like we grow seedlings every year and spend a lot of time outside. So yeah, I love it.
You inspired me. We just built a patio at the end of the summer, and I'm searching Pinterest because it's just a tiny patio, like that's mm-hmm. all we've got, but I was like, how do I do like vertical mm-hmm. gardening? Mm-hmm. So I'm super inspired by you. Yeah. And I've been saving seeds,
yes,
and letting them dry out,
yeah,
just based on because I saw you did the you had the seed exchange,
yeah, yep.
And I didn't participate, but I learned next how year. how to get my seeds from the mm-hmm. food I already have. Mm-hmm. Yep. So I'm already excited to join in and plant them myself mm-hmm. too.
Yeah. It's great fun. It's a great way to meet neighbors. Mm-hmm. You know, being outside is not just therapeutic for me, but it provides a really safe place for me to talk with neighbors about God. Mm. I'm not inviting them into a church where they've been hurt or where there's mm-hmm. baggage. I'm just asking them to, you know, hang out in a yard. Mm-hmm. So it's been a real gift for sure.
What has been the easiest change for you since arriving in St. Louis?
I feel like I love my neighborhood. Like I will stay there given the opportunity forever. I don't know what God has for me, but like my desire would be I could stay in this place forever. I was not anticipating how quickly I would just learn to love a place and a neighborhood, and kind of the vibe and culture and the people there is just, they're my people, and I love that. Mm-hmm. So that's been so easy. Mm-hmm. It has taken zero work for me to love the place that I live.
So what's been the hardest?
One thing I think I was not anticipating, and I just didn't prepare for this at all. Part of it I couldn't prepare for, but just so I moved there in Thanksgiving, right? And immediately there was kind of a sense of loss. You know, I'm away from family, away from my community, my friends. I felt like I had to kind of separate myself from those relationships and not, you know, reach out as often as I might want so that I had the time and space to invest in new people and new relationships. So that felt like a real loss to me. And then, you know, I moved to St. Louis anticipating a certain group of people being there. And in the time I've been there, they've left. Mm. And, you know, I have to mention even Steve, like mm-hmm. Losing Steve was such a heartbreak, obviously, but he was a big part of like what made me comfortable in moving to St. Louis, you know, that we had a history. I knew he was living in the neighborhood. He would be my neighbor. And there was a real sense of security in that. And so like losing Steve, some of my dear friends moving away from St. Louis, I just was not prepared for that loss. Mm. And it really, like, grief is real and it's hard. And working through all of that just has been really hard. And, you know, you see the little glimmers of like, okay, this is why God brought me through this. Mm. But I'm still at a point where I'm like, why? Like, why did I have to walk through all of these things? Why, you know, why did Ketsia have to walk through all of that? And yeah, so I think that's been the hardest part, I think. Mm-hmm. And also just really surprising, like just wasn't prepared for that.
Yeah. Something I hope that we can do on the Prepare podcast is not just skim the surface on certain things that are happening in our country and in our world. And I think I would like to hear what you experienced in your neighborhood after last summer with Ferguson, Missouri. Like, that was so close to you guys. So I want to see if you could speak to that experience and what you learned from that.
Yeah. I'll be real.
Please do.
Okay. So I moved in, I moved there only maybe 6 months later is when Michael Brown was shot, unarmed black teenager shot by a police officer. And it grieves me to say this, but my like initial response was, well, why was that kid giving a cop a hard time? And in hindsight, like, that speaks so much to my growing up and my privilege and the fact that I was totally unaware of what my neighbors and friends and the people of color in this nation face. So I feel awful, like, confessing that. I'm not proud of that thought. And so since then, I feel like God has really changed my heart as far as looking at the bigger picture and, like, really asking questions about the experiences that my black friends have had growing up and kind of learning more about those things. So as far as me personally, it totally changed my perspective on racism and inequality and, like, all of these things. As far as my community, I think it's hard because a lot of my neighbors are, like, just hoping to make it to tomorrow, that they're not overly involved or aware of these conversations about what happened in Ferguson. And that's also painful because, you know, it affects them in ways that it doesn't affect me. And for them to just struggle to even be engaged in those conversations because they're so worried about the day-to-day, that has also been really eye-opening. I don't know. I think we've never... My neighborhood, I don't think we were ever in fear of what was going on. We felt really safe in that regard. We tried to, like, jump in where we could to help. The Salvation Army is developing kind of a relationship with Ferguson, and so we'd serve on canteens. We did some painting there. You know, so many of the buildings were, they still are, I should say, covered in plywood because all the windows were broken out. So we went and painted murals and tried to kind of bring something beautiful to a really hard place. So I don't know if that answers that question completely, other than we're figuring it out. Like, we're asking questions. We're going to the forums. We're going to the book clubs. You know, we're going to these places where the conversations are happening, so that we can be better informed and that we can really contend for our neighbors and be a means of reconciliation and be a voice for reconciliation. And also, like, providing space for what we might consider the powerless, for them to be heard. You know, they're not voiceless. Like, they have a voice. We just don't make any space for them to be heard. And I think that's important. So
if we have any listeners that might live in a area that just isn't terribly diverse and they've seen the news and they've considered all these things, like, do you have a word of advice for them on how to begin seeing things from a different perspective?
Yeah, I would definitely say don't shy away from the conversations. Ask hard questions, and especially if you have, you know, friends or people in your core who are, you know, people of color, like, ask them the questions you're curious about. You know, don't be afraid of that. I think sometimes we're worried, we don't want to offend. But I think if you have a posture of humility and you're like, I recognize there's so much I don't understand, please help me understand. I want to know. I think that is huge. I think additionally, for me, what's been helpful, just doing a ton of reading from perspectives that are not my own. Mm-hmm. And that means reading advice columns from people who are maybe really conservative or really liberal, which I don't necessarily consider myself one or the other. You know, finding ways to kind of hear what other people are saying and asking. And I don't know, I think that's important. Mm-hmm. And don't assume you're right. Mm-hmm. Like, don't make the assumption that you've got it figured out.
Right.
Because odds are
right.
You might not be right.
Right.
And
to consider, you know, I don't want to say, what would Jesus do? I do not want to say. but really considering who he is,
mm-hmm.
and who we are in him and how he thinks of his creation.
Yeah.
And when it says we are made in the image of God, to remember that that's not just one group of people,
mm-hmm.
that is everyone. And if we could look at things through that lens of we are made in the image of God, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, thanks. I didn't prep you for that.
Yeah. I know. I feel like I would have I have some books. Like, can you put a link
on this
thing? So,
yeah. Yeah, so I can, some resources.
Yeah, I can send you some links of, like, things that have helped me kind of start having these conversations. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I can send that, though.
Mm-hmm. I heard one recently from, her name is Natasha Morrison, mm-hmm. and she's has started a reconciliation curriculum called Be the Bridge, and I downloaded it because there was you could download it for free, at least mm-hmm. part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks really, it's almost like Embrace groups.
Okay.
But with the focus of discussing reconciliation among people groups.
Yeah.
So it sounds very interesting, but I can link all of your resources and mm-hmm. the Be the Bridge and mm-hmm. the show notes. The show notes. I always hear podcast hosts say that.
Oh. I'm new to the podcast recording.
Oh, that's thing. What they say.
Okay. I always hit end by the time they get to that.
What?
Like, I'm always like, next.
That was good. That was interesting. Sarah, I've known you for a long time. We grew up in the same division, but we really didn't get to know each other really into, I'd say, our 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And you have been a person I've always felt like I could share with and talk through about relationships and being single and being a single in late 20s and now 30s. So I wanted to invite you to talk a bit about what it's like to be in your early 30s, to be in ministry, and to be doing that as a single person.
Yeah. So I will not pretend that singleness has been an easy road for me. I think there are aspects that are easy for me, but like the feelings are real as far as, like, you know, I went to a Christian college, went to Asbury, and I arrived there thinking, like, this is it. Like, I find my husband here, and then, like, and then life happens after that. And it did not even cross my mind that, like, maybe that wouldn't happen.
Mm.
And, you know, senior year happens, and, like, people are getting engaged, and weddings are planned, and suddenly I'm in, like, 4 weddings. Then I'm like, okay, well, maybe, like, in my 20s, I'll find somebody, you know, whatever. So fast forward to 33. And, you know, there's still a little bit of hurt. Like, every time you see a new engagement, you're like, mm-hmm. oh, another wedding. Or another friend tells you they're pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, my whole life, I mean, from, like, as little as I can remember, the only dream I've had for my life, the only desire I've had for my life is to be a mom. Mm-hmm. Like, that's it. And I'm at a point now where I'm like, oh, like, that might not be my story. And, like, you're doing the math, and you're like, if I'm 33, and, like, how long to meet somebody, and then you have to get married, and then, like, you know, and I think as women, we kind of go mm-hmm. through that timeline in our minds. And I won't pretend that, like, that isn't heartbreaking, and that I mean, I've lost sleep over it. I've cried over it. I feel like I've really grieved and mourned that a lot. But I think when it comes down to it, you know, unhappy single people make unhappy married people. And mm-hmm. if you can't get there as a single person, then I can't imagine that like living with somebody is going to fix that, because like I've had roommates. Mm-hmm. I've been a roommate. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think that marriage is the solution to any amount of unhappiness.
And right.
I don't see any evidence of that. So I think I kind of look at it like I have a choice. So I don't have a whole lot of a choice like right now in like getting married. Like nobody's asked. So like why, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So I have a choice. Like I can either be like satisfied in my life, or I can be unsatisfied. Mm-hmm. And I choose to be satisfied. Mm-hmm. Like I have to. And yeah, there are sad days, there are hard days, but I think when it comes down to it, like I have so much freedom in my schedule and in my finances to be like I can be so generous in my time and even with my money. Like I only have to cover my expenses. I don't have to worry about, you know, a bunch of children. Mm-hmm. I don't have to worry about any of those things. And so it puts me in a position to be really generous, to be really open, and to kind of just embrace the people around me. I don't know. So I would say it can be hard, but it's not the end of the world. And I really believe that at the end of the day, like, I am whole. I am enough. Mm-hmm. And a husband will not change that. So yeah, even on the hard days, I have like a list of grievances against the married people mm-hmm. in this world and how they speak to me.
Say a few.
Like, okay. So it really frustrates me when, like knowing that I've longed for children my whole life and somebody, and I say something about like, you know, how I would love to have kids. And then their response is like, yeah, but think of all the time you have right now. And I'm like, time, children, like not the same thing, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. You know, yeah. Like this longing, do you sit and long for like time? Maybe you do. I don't know. But like, were you thinking about time when you were 12 with that baby doll? No, mm-hmm. no. You know, so right. Like, it just seems really like, I don't know the word, but I don't like it. Or like, you're so great. Why are you single?
Oh, that's my...
And that one really gets me.
Insulting.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I hate that one.
Yeah. Or the one that really, I promise you, like, makes me want to lose it is that maybe you're too picky. Mm. Or like, just give someone a chance. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, I mean, sure. I've not turned anybody down. You know, I've not turned marriage proposal down. So mm-hmm. I don't think I'm being too picky.
No.
But
then you gotta have standards. Like that's like that. So did they.
Right.
Any other what not to say's?
Oh, I'm trying to, I wish I had like a list written before I came. I think that if you're married, let me still be your friend.
Yeah.
Make a space for me in your life. Mm-hmm. And know that, like, I'm okay just hanging out with you and your kids. Like, it doesn't need to be like, you know, we have to have time set aside. Like, I'm okay just joining in with kind of the mundane of your life. I like those things. You know, I want to see you as a parent mm-hmm. and as a wife. Don't feel like I don't want to be a part of that because I maybe, like, don't identify or I'm not at that place in life. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't always have to be, like, a girl's night.
Right.
Out or let's just right. do girls. It's like, it's okay. Like, it's okay for me to be around
right.
you guys as a family. Like,
yeah.
It's
yeah.
actually
yeah.
healthy. It's very come. Healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So how has Jesus used the Salvation Army to form you?
Well, in Girl Guards, I learned how to pack a suitcase. And I still pack my suitcase in that exact fashion. I did it today. Not today, this week.
I was never a Girl Guard.
There's like a special way to pack a suitcase to maximize space. And
my gosh.
So I've been formed in that way. But no, all kidding aside, I think there have been a few key things that have really like been a part of my formation. I think my youth group growing up, Steve Diaz was just such a great, he made going to church so fun that like I wanted to be there. It never occurred to me to like hate church or not want to be there. And so I think that was huge. And more specifically, I would say my experiences with doing SMT, both as a participant and then as a leader, it really allowed me to see just God's creation and God's people in other settings was huge. It also, I mean, taught me a lot about what it means to be a global citizen and to care about life beyond myself. So those experiences were huge. And, you know, those are the friendships I developed in those things were huge as well and are still people who I love dearly now. I think, like, professionally, for sure, I've had a lot of opportunities to grow. You know, I've been challenged and given the freedom to try new things, and that's been great. I think our theology can be a little odd. So I think because of that, and then going to like a Christian school where people came from all different denominations, and I've really had to like dig deep into what I believe personally and how that aligns with the Salvation Army and kind of that inward faith development of like, okay, why does the Salvation Army believe this? And like, do I believe this as well? But I feel like growing up, I had really good people who allowed me to ask those questions and kind of figure out the answers to those things without being like, no, the Salvation Army is the way to know God, mm-hmm. you know, and this is how you have to do it. So that has been really influential, I think, in just like developing my own understanding of God and his work. I think, you know, God has moved through the Salvation Army, I think, mostly through relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, just the people who have poured into me and mentored me, who have, you know, brought meals to my family when our life was falling apart. The people have helped me move and, you know, just been a friend to me, listened to me cry. That's been because of the Salvation Army.
Mm-hmm. We'll end with this. And I started strong. I asked Danielle and Karen, and then I started forgetting. But now I want to pick back up and ask my guest, what are the things that you're into right now? Like, it could be anything, like an app that you love or lip gloss. It can be a variety of things.
Okay.
So have you got two or three things that you're really into right now?
Okay. Can it be like hobby things?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so I'm such a nerd. I took a class. There's a nonprofit in St. Louis that is my happy place, mm-hmm. and they work on creative reuse. And I took a class in bookbinding.
Okay. Like how to?
Yeah. It's amazing. Really? I know how to bind. Like, I can make journals just out of anything. It's the best. So I've been nice. Like really, I'm pretty crafty. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like something I'm into. And right now I feel like my whole life is, not whole life, all of my extra things that I'm into is like consumed by the garden right now. Mm. Like, what can I grow and where can I fit it? And like, how many possible things can I fit in this space? So those are my things. Yeah. I'm done with skinny jeans.
Okay. What are you wearing?
They're kind of skinny jeans, but like, I'm not skinny and I never have been. You don't have to put this on there, but you can in case there's any non-skinny people listening. But like, I want the fashions to just catch up with my body type because right now everything at the store does not look good on me and I'm over it. And so
I'm over it.
I'm done and maybe I'll boycott. And not buy clothes. I don't know. But I got to wear something.
You got to sort that out.
Oh, man. It's a struggle, guys.
It's not. Girls, ladies, it's not women. Inclusive. It's no. not. The apparel industry is not inclusive.
No.
Thanks for bringing it up. I hope they're listening.
Not inclusive. Like, I'm sorry. I have thick calves. Like, I always have.
Deal with it. Fashion industry.
What's your circulation on this? Like, how many people listen?
You know what? It varies.
Okay.
You know, that probably if Danielle has the most listens.
Okay.
Between 400 and 500.
What?
Oh, and then gosh. Karen was between, I think, 200 and 300. And oh my gosh. It kind of dribbles down from there. But
okay.
But no less than 150.
Okay.
Each episode. So we've got some people will be tuning in.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, don't feel the pressure for the skinny jeans. If you don't feel comfortable, just don't wear them.
Amen. Amen. I affirm that. All right. That's it, Sarah. You did great. I think we all feel much closer to you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing.
My pleasure.
Thanks again for joining us. I really hope you enjoyed hearing from Sarah. If you have a guest and topic suggestion, please feel free to send me a message at our new email address, thepreparepodcast@usc.salvationarmy.org. Thanks again.
I really struggle with the giggles.
All right, don't talk.
I'm done.
Don't speak
Sarah until out. Spoken.